Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1964 that the Beatles did what? Was it A, change their name from the Silver Beatles? Was it B, recorded their first song? Was it C, made their American TV debut? Or was it D, broke up as a band? So what did the Beatles do on this day back in 64 anyway? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1969 that George Harrison's tonsils were removed. What happened to those tonsils? Was it A, someone stole them from the hospital? Was it B, they were buried in a sacred ceremony in India? Was it C, the tonsils were destroyed so they couldn't be sold? Or was it D, they were bronzed and donated to a museum in Liverpool? Harrison's tonsils, where'd they go anyway? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of February the 7th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1956 that Buddy Holly signed a recording contract with Decca Records. He left the E out of his last name, H-O-L-L-E-Y, and dropped it from his stage name as well. Buddy, that'll be the day, Holly's contract signed today in 1956. And it was just 3 years later today, 1959, that Buddy Holly's funeral was held in Lubbock, Texas. On February the 3rd, 1959, American rock and roll musicians Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper, J.P. Richardson, were all killed in a plane crash near Clear Lake, Iowa. Don McLean wrote in his song American Pie that the crash represented the day the music died. Holly's funeral was today in 1959. And finally, in transitions,
it is the evening of the day. I sit and watch the children play. Smiling faces I can see, but not for me. I sit and watch as tears go by.
Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones, As Tears Go By. Marianne Faithfull dies at 78. She will be dearly missed. This is written by Rachel DeSantis in People.com on January the 30th, 2025. Marianne Faithfull, the British singer and actress who was widely known as the Crown Princess of swinging 60s London, has died. Marianne passed away peacefully in London today in the company of her loving family. A cause of death was not immediately available. Faithful, whose music career often discussed in the same breath as her romantic liaisons with stars like Mick Jagger and her struggles with substance abuse, had contracted COVID-19 in April 2020 and dealt with long-term side effects such as memory and lung problems as well as fatigue. The As Tears Go By singer was born in Hampstead, London in December 1946 to Baroness Ariso and Major Glyn Faithful, a British intelligence officer who separated when she was six. Faithful was famously discovered at a London party in 1964 by Rolling Stones manager Andrew Long Oldham, who launched her career with the Mick Jagger and Keith Richards penned song As Tears Go By, the song playing in the background right now. Stars, You Want Some, off his new country album, Look Up, introduces our country music news. Starr released his first album in 5 years, Look Up, earlier in January. The country and western record is co-produced by 12-time Grammy Award winner T-Bone Burnett and features contributions from Eagles guitarist Joe Walsh and bluegrass singer Alison Krauss. The former Beatle also filmed a tribute concert at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville to air on CBS and Paramount Plus as a benefit for the American Red Cross and those impacted by the California wildfires. Ringo and Friends at the Ryman will feature some of Starr's most memorable hits performed alongside Sheryl Crow, Jack White, and The War and Treaty, among others. It is always a thrill to play the Ryman, and this time we're going country, Ringo said to CBS show. T-Bone has put together a great show. I'm excited to hear my songs done in a country vein and to play with the incredible group of musicians. It will be two nights of peace, love, and country music. Ringo and Friends at the Ryman will air this spring on CBS and is set to stream on Paramount Plus. Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2 introduces our classical music news. It's titled, Why Does Classical Music Make Us Cry? This is published on the 31st of January, 2025, by Maddie Shaw Roberts in ClassicFM.com. Catchy music makes you tap your foot. Emotive music catches you off guard and, without warning, has your eyes pricking and nose running. So why do we have this physiological response to music? Think about your favorite piece of music, and then imagine hearing it live for the first time. If you're having trouble, have a listen to the beautiful piece of Bach for solo piano, or try Rachmaninoff's Second Piano Concerto, the song playing in the background now. If you felt a lump in your throat or a stinging sensation in your eyes, you wouldn't be alone. Music can elicit highly emotional responses. A 2017 survey of 892 adults found that nearly 90% had experienced feeling like crying when listening to music. Outside of musical enjoyment, crying can be a great cathartic release, helping to relieve stress when we're feeling sad or anxious. Tears contain stress hormones, which are released from our bodies when we cry. But why do we cry to music? It can feel like music speaks directly to our hearts. Shedding a few tears to music is considered a healthy response. It can help us process our deepest emotions in a safe setting, in a concert hall, surrounded by fellow music lovers, at a ceremony, or perhaps at home, listening to a recording. One of the main purposes of music is to communicate something beautiful for our collective appreciation. So if the music makes you cry, it's probably doing its job right. When we feel an emotional response to the music, it can be down to familiarity. Music conjures memories of the past, of a loved one, a dream, or a family member. And hearing great classical music can help connect us to times gone by, creating sense of poignancy that this music was also enjoyed by audiences over 200 years ago. Tears are often invoked when the musical choices feel familiar. In the build-up to the great pianistic climax in Rachmaninoff's concerto, anticipation builds, and the reward circuit in our brain is triggered as the expected moment in the music finally arrives and the feeling of tension and anticipation is released. Our physiological reactions can be down to pure musical appreciation. The feeling of awe we experience at experiencing art performed at a high level. Techniques like long melodic phrases, harmonic tension, and resolve and changes in intensity can elicit feelings of satisfaction, hope, and even hopelessness. Studies show that dramatic changes in dynamics, rhythm, and texture can light up the brain, and that satisfying harmonic journeys can trigger the rewards-related regions of our brains. When words are difficult, music can communicate the unsayable. That's a paraphrase of a quote by Hans Christian Andersen, who once said, "Where words fail, music speaks."
Sitting home all alone. If you can't come please, please tell the folk, don't be cruel to who heart is true.
Elvis's Don't Be Cruel introduces our blues music news. It's a book review of Pete Preston Letterbox, Before Elvis, the African-American musicians who made the king. This is written by Corey Oldwiler, published in the Minnesota Star Tribune, 2nd of February, 2025. Music is the most cannibalistic creative endeavor, with musicians not only drawing inspiration from predecessors and contemporaries, but often imitating specific techniques, stealing catchy riffs, or covering entire songs.
I really love you, baby, cross my heart. Let's walk up to the preacher and let's say I do. Then you'll know you'll have me, and I know that I'll have you. Don't be cruel to who heart is true.
For music historian Preston Letterbach, Elvis Presley stands out as an artist who synthesized a remarkable range of styles, black and white, urban and rural, spiritual and unholy, becoming the most quintessentially American musician ever. But Presley is also our most polarizing musician, according to Letterbach. Someone mainly continued to believe ascended to his throne as the king of rock and roll only by taking credit from black musicians who preceded him. In his new book, Before Elvis, the author addresses that perception through the story of several black artists who influenced Presley's career. All were indeed victimized to various degrees, but the fault lies not with Elvis, but a recording industry and society that exploited them. Letterbox subjects include three musicians who famously wrote or recorded songs that became synonymous with Presley. Arthur Crudup wrote That's All Right, Elvis's first commercial recording. Big Mama Thornton had a number one rhythm and blues hit with Hound Dog 3 years before Presley first sang the song. And Junior Parker penned Mystery Train, which is widely considered Elvis's finest recording. Letterbach also details the lives of Reverend William Herbert Brewster, whose East Trigg Baptist Church was the site of legendary black gospel performances that influenced a fresh out of high school Presley, and Calvin Newborn, the immensely talented session musician and pelvic thrusting guitar god, whom Letterbach calls the most overlooked, underappreciated, and important influence on Elvis. Letterbach baits a provocative hook ever so often with lines like, "No amount of historical appreciation justifies the robbery of Crudup," but time and again the blame lands at the feet of the business of music publishing. Supplementing the biographies are engaging details about groundbreaking radio stations that dared to play black music. The machinations of the Memphis political machine under segregationist boss Crump and his censor Lloyd Britneford, and the opportunistic recording impresarios who emerged in the 1950s, like Sam Phillips, whose Sun Records distributed Elvis, B.B. King, Johnny Cash, and many others. Shakira's Fool introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled 2025 Grammy Award winners. CBSNews.com on the 3rd of February, 2025. Beyoncé finally won the coveted Album of the Year award at the 2025 Grammys after being shut out the last four times she was nominated. Beyoncé entered the night with the most nominations, 11, for her album, Cowboy Carter, becoming the most nominated artist in Grammy history with 99 throughout her career. In addition to Album of the Year, she also won Best Country Album and Best Country Duo Group Performance, Billie Eilish, Kendrick Lamar, Post Malone, and Charlie XCX received 7 nominations this year, while Taylor Swift, Sabrina Carpenter, and Chappell Roan earned 6 nods. Lamar swept all 5 categories he was nominated in, winning both Record and Song of the Year. Roan was also a big winner, taking home the award for Best New Artist. Shakira won Best Latin Pop Album. Comedian and former host of The Daily Show, Trevor Noah, returned to host the ceremony for a 5th straight year. Swift was not a performer this year, but she did present the award for Best Country Album to Beyoncé. In addition to celebrating the best in music, this year's show also focused on the devastating wildfires that burned through neighborhoods in Los Angeles area last month, killing at least 29 people. Throughout the show, Noah reminded viewers and corporate sponsors alike to donate to relief efforts, and airtime was given to local business owners who lost their establishments in the fires. A group of Los Angeles County firefighters was invited on stage to present the final award of the night and got a standing ovation from the crowd. The Grammy Awards were held at the Crypto.com Arena in Los Angeles. The show aired live on the CBS television network and streamed on Paramount Plus. Finally, in music research and technology, Chris Kamara says singing is a form of rehab as he shares health update. This is written by Marie Claire Dorking, January 2025, in UK style. Chris Kamara has given an update on his apraxia diagnosis, explaining how singing has helped his condition. Earlier this year, the popular UK sports announcer revealed he was living with apraxia of speech, which is AOS, a neurological condition which affects the body's motor function and often creates issues with speech. Kamara says the truth of the matter is you get more fluency in the voice when you sing, so it's a form of rehab when you're trying to get your voice back. Singing helps. The power of music can be enormous. Singing's a great way to bring people together whilst being so positive for mental health, Kamara told BBC. Singing has always been a part of my life, even when times have been tough. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1964 that the Beatles did what? Was it A, changed their name from the Silver Beatles? Was it B, recorded their first song? Was it C, made their American TV debut? Or was it D, broke up as a band? Correct answer. Answer C. The Beatles made the first of 3 record-breaking appearances on the Ed Sullivan Show on this day back in 64. 73 million people watched the show. It was their American TV debut. As noted in EdSullivan.com, the Beatles touched down at New York's Kennedy Airport on February the 7th, 1964. They were met by a throng of reporters and a horde of 3,000 screaming fans. Upon disembarking the plane, the Beatles were whisked to a press conference hosted by Capitol Records, in which they playfully answered questions from the media. When asked, "How do you find America?" Ringo Starr jokingly replied, "Turn left at Greenland." It should be remembered that while this hullabaloo was happening, there was still an air of gloom in America. Just 77 days prior to the Beatles' appearance on Sullivan, President Kennedy had been assassinated. By now, the country was ready for some much-needed diversion, and it came in the form of four young lads from Liverpool, their sound, their look, their energy, and their charisma. The Beatles' third, and according to their contract, final performance on the Ed Sullivan Show was technically their first. The show had been taped prior to their live February 9th debut, but saved for broadcast until February 23rd, 1964. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 69 that George Harrison's tonsils were removed. So what happened to those tonsils? Was it A, someone stole them from the hospital? B, they were buried in a sacred ceremony in India? C, the tonsils were destroyed so they couldn't be sold? Or D, they were bronzed and donated to a museum in Liverpool? Correct answer. Answer C. The tonsils were destroyed to prevent them from being sold. Turns out that Harrison was suffering from tonsillitis during the group's so-called rooftop concert, which was held the week before his operation, and explains why his singing role in the rooftop concert was limited. Harrison was bedridden for another week after the procedure. Harrison's voice was not affected by the procedure. So, let's close out today's program with George Harrison and the Beatles. Here comes the sun.
Here comes the sun. Doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. Little darling.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.